AP Radio News. I'm Rita Foley. Just arriving in Iraq. Five Russian warplanes bought secondhand from Moscow. They'll be in the air in the next few days against the Sunni insurgents, we're hearing. Our Ryan Lucas in Baghdad says the government there badly needs a win as it battles the Sunnis. Today's fight is in Saddam Hussein's former hometown of Tikrit. And we're hearing that the Iraqi army is coordinating its campaign with the United States.
The Iraqi military was routed in the militants' initial advance a couple of weeks ago and largely melted away in the face of that attack. A firm government response in Tikrit and a victory would go a long way, or at least part of the way, towards restoring a bit of government faith as well as public faith in the security forces' ability to stem the militant tide.
We've learned that Ahmed Abu Qatala will be in federal court in Washington again on Wednesday. The alleged mastermind of the attacks in Benghazi, Libya, that killed four Americans, pleaded not guilty yesterday during a brief appearance. Our Mark Sherman was there when Abu Qatala was brought in.
Abu Qatala wore a two-piece black tracksuit. He had his hands not restrained, and he kept them behind his back for most of the 10-minute hearing. He looked at the judge without any expression as he heard the charges, and he spoke only two words, yes and no, when he was sworn in.
Police in New Orleans are trying to figure out why somebody opened fire on Bourbon Street, injuring seven people, at least one of them critically. Police aren't saying anything more about this at the moment, so no details. Pope Francis said Mass at the Vatican today, his first major public ceremony since health problems forced him to cancel several appointments. Pope Francis is 77 years old. This is AP Radio News. A sad story from Philadelphia, where a three-year-old girl was killed when a metal security grate fell from a shop yesterday afternoon, say police. Tracy Stanford was there.
We saw the awning laying on the ground, but didn't realize there was a baby under the awning until the mother started screaming.
Allison Brady heard the awning come down.
It was more than a thud. It was a big bang. Some people thought it was a gunshot.
They talked to WPVI-TV. Officials say there were no reported problems with the security door and no open violations. The investigation's underway into how this tragedy happened. Two construction company directors are in custody today after an apartment building under construction in India collapsed, killing at least 11 workers. Rescuers are still digging in a search for missing workers. I'm Rita Foley, AP Radio News.
Do you know a woman who exemplifies leadership and is making a difference in our community? Then nominate her today to receive an award at the March of Dimes Heroines of Washington Gala. Finalists will be recognized at a Black Tie Awards presentation on November 18th. All proceeds will benefit the March of Dimes mission to give all babies a healthy start in life. To learn more about the March of Dimes and Heroines of Washington, visit marchofdimes.com/DC.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Executive Leaders Radio. In this hour, you'll hear directly from our region's finest business leaders. Through each of the interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, about leadership styles and opportunities that lie ahead. Prepare to be inspired and entertained and to hear wisdom unheard elsewhere. Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Peter Schwartz. I'm joined by my co-host, Mark Cohen, with a company called Optifor. We have a great lineup of guests on our show today, including Parker Teal, who's the president of Teal Construction, Mike Leff, the VP of Civilian Government Solutions for AT&T, Mike Infernari, who's the executive director for the Foundation for Fairfax County Public Schools, and Ken Kirk, the executive director for the National Association of Clean Water Agencies. First up is Parker Teal, who is the president of Teal Construction. Tell us a little bit about Teal Construction, Parker.
We're a general contracting company located in Northern Virginia and do interior construction, retail, office, restaurants, primarily some educational work also.
When was the company founded?
It's been about 30 years now.
And how big or small are you guys today?
We are about 35 employees currently.
And give us an example of the kind of work you do.
Currently, we've got a renovation of the mall ceiling over at Tyson's Corners, redoing all of the lighting system and architectural ceiling features.
Right. So all the interior kind of stuff for a building?
Right, and retail shops, restaurants.
Right. How did you get the idea for the business?
I had been working for a company when I graduated from college, and they decided to shut their doors, and at that point I started the company with a partner.
Did you have a big background in construction?
Worked summers in high school and in college.
You worked summers and then you started a company in construction. How old were you?
I was 23 years old.
So what the heck were you thinking?
Well, I was pretty sure at that age I knew just about everything there was to know about the business. So
you thought it was a slam dunk.
It seemed like a good decision.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Looking back on it, what was the hardest part about starting the company?
Well, I didn't have any at that age. Even if I'd taken some business courses, I didn't have any real life experience on running a business. So there was a pretty steep learning curve. On some very basic business concepts.
So at what point did you realize, you know what, I can do this? Was there a moment in time or a particular project, or when did the light go off that said, you know, I made the right decision?
I think it was when we got involved with a project over at Tyson's Mall with working for a construction management company that was doing conversion of the mall from a single level facility to a two level facility, and it was a steady stream of work. Learned a lot from the construction management company, Whiting Turner, and on how to run work, how to treat subcontractors.
And then what would you say the toughest part of starting the business was?
I think the biggest part was lack of capital. I really did not have any operating cash in the beginning. We were doing residential work, and we're depending on deposits to fund the work.
How'd you get through that?
Step by step. Yeah. It's just a slow process. You know, it's working in the field and coming home at night doing estimates.
So your industry has been through some churn over the decades. How many recessions have you been through?
I think it's four.
What's it like to take a construction company through a recession?
It's been something that going through them has helped to educate me a little bit, become more sensitive when they're approaching. We do work around the country, and which is a benefit in anticipating the recessions. 2007, we were doing a small 7,000 square foot interior build out for a school in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and we were getting calls unsolicited from large mechanical contractors from Detroit asking if they could bid on this 7,000 square foot project, and that was the first alarm bells was not right with the world.
So would it be safe to say you've just learned how to react fast? Are you good at reading the tea leaves, or what have you learned about these recessions that make you a better businessman?
Eventually, it dawns on you that things are not going to continue, gangbusters and everything going along smoothly. So
yeah, but you take a company up to a certain size, and then you have to shrink it a bit, right?
A little bit, yeah. We've been fortunate that on the recent recessions, we've been able to maintain our personnel.
Oh, really?
Isn't
that a little unusual for a construction company to do that?
It is. The construction industry was in a recession, not a depression. We were at over 25% unemployment at the height of the recession, so it definitely was unusual for us, but we were able to get lots of small jobs and keep everybody busy.
Mm-hmm.
So would you say the key is learning how to pivot quickly?
That's certainly part of it as far as dealing with recessions. Yes, and trying to figure out, okay, we're doing this right now, but with the recession coming on, what do we need to refocus? How do we need to redefine what our specialty is?
So you're providing the vision for all of this?
Through experience, yes.
Okay.
You've been in the business a long time. What's the biggest changes that you've seen?
One thing that we used to have in-house tradespeople. We had carpenters. We had some guys that can do masonry work, drywall, painting. And today, that's very unusual for a general contractor to have in-house trade people in this area, especially.
Yeah.
So everything's subcontracted out, and the pace of construction has gotten faster and faster. The numbers are so dependent on commercial work of getting, if it's a retail shop, getting the doors open and the cash register ringing.
Yeah. And where are you from?
In this area in McLean, Virginia.
Born and raised?
Born in Pensacola, moved here when I was 3 years old.
Uh-huh. What were Mom and Dad doing growing up?
His dad worked for the Navy Department as a civilian, and Mom was a public school teacher for Fairfax County.
What do you think you take away looking back on it from Mom and then Dad?
Strong sense of character, importance of honesty, and values.
Uh-huh. How has honesty made you a better businessman? Sounds obvious, but not for everybody.
I think all of our clients appreciate being dealt with in an honest fashion. Sure.
Brothers and sisters?
I've got two brothers and a sister.
Where are you in the order? Sorry.
I'm baby.
Uh-huh. What was it like being the youngest growing up?
I think it helped shape me.
In what way?
I was separated by 6 years from my brother and 8 from my sister.
Uh-huh.
And so I always had a target of trying to keep up and not warmly received on that end at certain times of life. So
what were you like as a kid?
Fairly independent as far as, grew up on a dairy farm. My parents rented a house on a dairy farm for the first 10, 11 years.
Did you work the dairy farm?
No, not really. Not a whole lot of playmates in that environment.
No.
And then we moved to a neighborhood, and so I think that helped create a little bit of independence.
How about mentors along the way, significant people that that showed up in your life, and because of that you benefited?
There were a bunch. Mike Confers, from a professional standpoint, who was a senior vice president of Whiting Turner. Great role model, great mentor, and my father-in-law was an independent businessman, had 5 kids when he started a business with $3,000 in his pocket, and has grown into a multi-million dollar.
How about your proudest moment professionally across all the years?
Wow, I don't know.
It's okay. How about personally?
Well, I've got my
two sons here in the room with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So your kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's the website address, Parker?
www.teelconstruction.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Parker Teel, who's the president of Teel Construction. I'd like to thank my co-host, Mark Cohen, with Optifor for helping me with the interview. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, for more about our executive leaders. This is Peter Schwarzer, your host. We'll be back in a moment right after this business spot. This is Peter Schwartz with Vistage International, and this is your business spotlight. Joining me for this segment is Doug Kay, who is a principal with a firm called Offutt Kerman. What is Offutt Kerman, Doug?
Offutt Kerman is a full-service law firm in the Mid-Atlantic region with offices from Philadelphia all the way down to Tysons Corner, Virginia, where I work.
Right. And you're a lawyer with the firm?
I'm a lawyer with the firm.
What practice area do you specialize in?
I mostly do work in commercial litigation, although I also do work with in doing criminal defense and personal injury, anything that gets me to trial.
Anything that gets you to trial. Well, why do your customers appreciate you?
I think they appreciate me because I am a careful and sympathetic listener, and I try to offer concrete solutions to their most vexing legal problems.
Well, give us an example. Do you have, without mentioning specifics, a recent example of where you were really good at this? How about your favorite client up till now, without getting into too particulars there?
Well, I represented a fellow who was in a commercial lease, and the landlord was determined to make him pay more than he should have been paying, and we had to go to court, and we had to go all the way through trial, and the client really appreciated the effort, and we got an excellent result for the client, and that was very satisfying. And since then, he's been talking me up all over town, so I can't thank him enough.
Yeah. What's the best part of practicing law for you?
I would say that it is taking people through difficult circumstances when they think they don't have any options and trying to find a good solution for them.
Right. What's the website address for the law firm?
www.offuttkerman.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Doug Kay, who's the principal with Offutt Kerman. This is Peter Schwartz, and that was your business spotlight. We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Peter Schwartz. I'm joined by my co-host, Mark Cohen with Optifor. And for this segment, we have Mike Leff, who's the Vice President of Civilian Government Solutions for AT&T. Tell us a little bit about your organization.
So AT&T is really all about mobilizing our world. And, you know, today we live in a global, mobile, always on. That's AT&T.
And you just bring that mission to the civilian agencies, I guess, right?
We do, right? It's all about the technology that enables the mission that serves our citizenry and other businesses.
So
and
give
other
us an example of a project you guys have just completed that would give us an idea of what you do.
Sure. Today we are in the midst of standing up one of the largest, most complex call centers in the country and in the government. And that's critical to help enable and better provide services for that agency to citizens that are looking to interact with that governmental agency.
And how long have you been the vice president?
Just finished up 5 months.
Just finished 5 months. Brand new into the role. Why did you want this job?
Well, to me, I've always been interested in technology and science and engineering.
Always? What does always mean?
How
old were you when you were mucking around technology?
Yeah, this is probably 3 or 4 years old, right? I'm taking everything apart. Parents not too happy. But just always interested in how things work and come together. And, you know, AT&T to me, with 138-year history, it's a very rich legacy.
Sure.
I mean, probably the largest innovation lab on the planet.
Right. So what else makes you good in this role?
I think this role requires leadership. It requires the ability to lead a large group of people across a variety of different industries.
You were telling us in the green room that at an early age you also discovered it's all about the people.
It's all about the people, yes.
What does that mean, and tell us how you came to that.
Well, In the beginning, I studied engineering and technology and was very focused on the role that that played. And as I got more into the business side and kind of got my feet wet in management and leadership, I realized that the people, and I'll emphasize the right people, are the greatest asset of any company.
But it came to you even sooner. You were telling us about a camp experience.
Yeah, so growing up, I went to sleepaway camp starting 7 years old. And after a couple of years of having that experience, I was fortunate enough to be able to actually work at those camps. And I tell you, there's nothing more rewarding than working with kids coming up from New York City, the inner cities, and giving them a couple of months of a life in terms of opportunity. And that's where I really made the connection of how important it is to empower kids and give them an opportunity.
And at a fairly young age, so you're about 12, 13 years old, and you're realizing the impact you're having on younger people.
Huge. Huge.
So look back on that and tell us what you learned from that experience that kind of shaped who you are today as a leader.
Sure. You know, the best way for me to frame that, and I'll frame it today, discounting it back to when I was 13,
sure,
is that a couple of weeks ago, we lost one of our nation's most prominent poets and civilian.
Yeah, Maya Angelou.
Maya Angelou. You know, and a lot of her work that she wrote was very rich and inspiring. But I think one thing that she put out there, which stuck with me and shapes the way that I think and lead, is she said, you know, people will forget what you said, and people will forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel. And that, to me, fundamentally drives how we should be in leading and interacting with people.
So you can trace that all the way back to 12 and 13 when you kind of learned that hands-on?
Yeah, just had a natural connection with people, and that's where I recognized I had a lot of intuition with respect to what makes people tick and what drives and motivates people.
So you have a technical talent coupled with a relational talent makes you ideal for leadership on paper. Give us your definition of leadership.
One word. It's inspiration. It's the ability to inspire, engage, mobilize people, and to get them to do things, quite frankly, that they don't necessarily want to do.
Uh-huh. And you like that?
I like it. There's nothing more rewarding and gratifying to see people engaged and organizing around some kind of an effort.
You said Martin Luther King was also a big figure in your life. Say a little bit more about that.
He was. He's somebody that I've always looked up to, somebody that to me is the, you know, kind of penultimate individual that, you know, was able to inspire and rally a large group of people around a very important cause.
And you told us in the green room you didn't meet the guy, you just knew of him historically?
Didn't meet the guy. I remember growing up, you know, I watched a little bit of, you know, some of the things that he did, but also remembered hearing that Martin Luther King had been shot. And it was a huge impact to me in terms of, you know, how devastating that was and the impact that it had on people of all ethnicities, races.
So where did you grow up?
I grew up in New York City.
Where in New York City?
Born in the Bronx, grew up in Queens. Grandmother, father lived in Manhattan.
Uh-huh. So what's life growing up in the Bronx and Queens like?
Life is fast. It's fast. You grow up quick. You got to strap yourself in.
You say that with a big smile on your face. So what was good about that experience?
Well, you gain a real appreciation about how important diversity is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't have a choice, right? You had people from all different walks of life. Ellis Island, obviously, the nexus for bringing people over from different parts of the world. But it's an amazing experience once you crack the code and recognize that you learn how to interact, you learn how to mix it up with people from all different walks of life. You're that much richer for having that experience.
For some people don't handle it as well as you apparently did. Were you just an eager, curious young kid that saw all this diversity as opportunity? How did you see it?
I think part of it is you grow up in this environment, and if you don't know anything else, it's normal.
Yeah.
It's normal. But I think you also have to have a little bit of curiosity, right, to want to engage.
It couldn't have all been roses. Talk about some tough stuff.
Sure, yeah. You meet different people from different walks of life. I already talked about that. And so it's trying to figure out how you balance and manage the relationships. You had people that literally lived on the street. They were growing up in the orphanages to people that were very wealthy. And so there was oftentimes a lot of conflict, either in the classroom, walking on your way to school, with having to deal with people that...
Yeah. Talk about the impact of mom and dad on you.
Huge.
In what way?
You know, they played different roles. My mom was somebody that had the opportunity, the good fortune, to really focus on taking care of the family and her husband. She was tremendous at that. My dad, very entrepreneurial, tremendous work ethic, and really was somebody that was all about providing for the family.
So who are you more like, your mom or your dad?
I have a blend of both. I would say I lean a little bit towards my father.
Uh-huh. Are there mentors along the way that have kind of really shaped who you are?
Yeah, besides my father, I would say that there are other people that I've worked with, as well as people that I look up to. Colin Powell certainly is somebody that I see that is somebody I've looked up to.
What would you say the toughest thing you've ever accomplished is?
I would say it was making the pivot from somebody that really didn't enjoy the experience, but was looking out far out in terms of, you know, the outcome, to one that's learned how to really enjoy life along the way.
Great. And your proudest moment up till now?
Oh, my kids. Absolutely.
Without hesitation. Good. What's the website address, Mike?
Website address is www.att.com.
One more time.
www.att.com.
Great. We've been speaking with Mike Leff, who's the VP of Civilian Government Solutions for AT&T. I'd like to thank Mark Cohen with Opti4 for helping me with the interview. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. This is Peter Schwartz, your host. We'll be back in a moment right after this Business Spotlight.
This is Les Smolin with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining us today is Mark Cohn, founder of Cohn & Burnett, a law firm. Mark, welcome. What is Cohn & Burnett?
We are a law firm that focuses on trusts and estates. So we do wills, trusts, powers of attorney, estate planning, and estate administration.
And what's your role in the company?
I'm the founder and the senior partner.
So what does it mean to be a senior partner?
Well, it means that in our case, I'm the thought leader, the visionary, the one who tries to figure out where we're headed. I'm not the managing partner who runs the day-to-day operations.
Okay, and what makes Cohn & Burnett so special?
We are, first of all, focused on taking care of our clients and just on their estate planning and administration. And I think we're one of the first firms in the area to introduce a fixed fee for doing estate planning.
Interesting. And what do they really appreciate about you and the company, your clients, that is?
You know, the clients tell me that they just love the experience. They are very comfortable and confident that their needs are being met here, and they enjoy working with us.
Hmm. And who or what is your perfect client, if you will?
Our perfect client is anybody who cares about what's going to happen to them when they can no longer take care of themselves or their family.
Mm-hmm. And what is it you actually enjoy most about the work?
You know, talking to the clients, that's the part. I could turn over all of the work to other attorneys here, but I hold on to the first part, which is meeting the clients, talking to them, getting to know them, getting to understand where they're, what they need and what they're looking for.
That's great. What's the website for Cohn & Burnett?
CohnandBurnett.com, all spelled out, the A and D in between there.
Thank you, Mark. We've been speaking with Mark Cohn, founder of Cohn & Burnett. This is Les Smolin, and that's been your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Peter Schwartz. I'm joined by my co-host, Mark Cohn, with Opti4. And for this segment, we have Mike Infinari. Did I get that right?
Yeah, perfect.
Who is the executive director for an organization called the Foundation for Fairfax County Public Schools. Tell us what that is, Mike.
Well, the foundation was created in 2010 by actually business leaders here in Northern Virginia, who wanted to
really create a strategic arm that would advance the school system's needs to meet the workforce needs of a growing Northern Virginia economy. They were deathly worried about having enough workers, especially high-tech and professional workers, to fill all these jobs that keep coming into Fairfax County.
So I've heard that kind of initiative going on at the community college level. This is the first time I'm hearing it go on at the elementary and secondary school level.
Well, that's a really good point. And the community colleges, Nova, Fabulous, George Mason, et cetera, you know, they're constantly looking at developing the workforce of tomorrow. But now, more and more, it's been shown, and I'm certainly not an academic or a scientist or a researcher, but early childhood education and then interventions with at-risk youth, you really point them earlier and earlier on the right trajectory to embrace science or STEM education or
right.
get to think about career tracks well before they arrive at high school.
So we've heard STEM a lot, but you introduced another word in a green room, STEAM.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain that?
Well, STEAM is the addition of the A, which is the arts. And actually, from what I understand, talking to our instructional services people, that more and more studies are coming out showing that the entrepreneurial and creative side of people, of young people, is developed when you give them elements of design and art. And think of Steve Jobs with Apple. He was less the engineer, and he was more of the art and the design and the customer experience.
Yeah,
that's what
creative
he brought
thinker.
To the table. Yeah. So those elements of introducing art make for more entrepreneurial, more free-thinking, developed young people as they move into careers.
You shared some startling statistics with us in the green room. Tell us about some of the unknowns about Fairfax County school system and the population that we're addressing.
Sure. I mean, first of all, Fairfax County Public Schools has just seen growth year after year. If you look at a bar chart, you're just going to see nothing but an upward trend. 15,000 more students have been introduced to the system in the last 7 years alone, and we're currently at 185,000 students across the county. We're going to be at 201,000 by 2020. So when our budget is relatively fixed or very tight, how can we serve more customers, to put it in business language, yet maintain the quality and innovate, again, to meet the workforce needs of the future, particularly with the high-tech elements that are in Northern Virginia?
What makes this work so important to you? Is there a personal connection here somehow?
Oh, absolutely. I'm a strong believer in education. I owe everything to the formative experience I received. My parents are immigrants from Europe, and they didn't have much in the way of education post-World War II. So they always said to me, you're going to be somebody. You're going to go to school. I was the first to graduate from college. They've been very proud. And that what's motivated me has been the formation by the Jesuit priests, the nuns. I went to Catholic school. But clearly, more and more evidence is coming out showing the early interventions, the ready to learn at pre-K, and then in those early elementary school years, having the skills. If a child falls behind at third grade, he's going to be farther behind at sixth and seventh, and by the time they get to high school, they may be lost. And when you particularly look at the demographics, back to your earlier question, we've seen a tripling in the English as a second language households coming into our school system, the free and reduced lunch eligible students, that number has more than doubled in the last 10, 15 years. So the whole demographic mix, it's not just more kids coming into the county being presented at our schools, but it's now poorer, more immigrants. You know, poverty is a huge barrier. So our founding fathers of the foundation said, in a county as affluent and prosperous as Fairfax, we can't have these kinds of social indicators and these children left behind. So we need to do something about it. And that's the motivation for the foundation, and it motivates me personally. As the son of immigrant parents,
yeah,
I owe a lot to the education I received,
right,
and of course, their personal drive.
So this is really a foundation, a vehicle for business, to find a way to participate,
yes,
in a relevant way at the elementary and secondary school level. Is that right?
Yes. We are aiming this foundation to forge business partnerships with the major employers of Fairfax County. And quite frankly, it's a business issue. It's a quality of life issue. It's not just about dollars and cents economic prosperity. Right. But we need to provide the workforce of tomorrow for Fairfax County and the world. And secondly, if we're going to maintain our standards, again, in Fairfax County, of prosperity, affluence, success, we know we can't have pockets of young people who fail to perform well in school, and then that cycle of poverty continues into their adult lives.
Yeah. So in, as the role of executive director, your primary role is fundraising. Would you say that's safe to say?
Fundraising and friendraising. You need
friendraising?
Well, you need to present a business case to CEOs. I mean, they want to see the facts. And, you know, you just don't go in hat in hand unless you want a dollar bill. So
where did you learn these two skill sets, fundraising and friendraising?
Well, first of all, you got to believe that there's a lot of money out there and people are generous. You can't work in this business if you don't believe that people will give. Too many fundraisers, actually, to criticize my own profession, they can find 50 reasons why somebody can't give or we can't ask, but you will receive if you ask. It sounds biblical, but
it's
true.
Is that an innate quality of yours? You just you're genuinely believing the best in people and you're curious?
Absolutely. I'm curious. And
you've been like this all your life?
Well, first of all, we're selling hopes and dreams. We're not selling widgets that are created and in a box and ready to install. So the hopes and dreams in the future, we're trying to quantify it, produce some ROI, point out what this means to the county, and we're going to present it in a business-like fashion to CEOs across the county.
So that's how you inspire people around a goal?
You first have to inspire. I mean, at a minimum, we have to establish credibility by saying we're the agency that can affect change in people's lives and we're a key ingredient in the county's success and prosperity. I mean, the school system is as fundamental as you get. A major portion of the county revenues go towards the schools, so we're a formidable force. So that's number one. We're very important to the business community because we determine Fairfax County to some degree, the quality of life, the success. Secondly, we've identified needs along three or four lines, curricular, facilities, our social objectives, closing this achievement gap. It's the civil rights issue of the 21st century, having Latinos and African Americans drop out at more than twice the rate of white and Asian students. That, again, is unconscionable. So we have to ask ourselves, why is that? We believe every child can learn and every child deserves to have a productive outcome. Not every kid's going to go to Villanova, but every person has to come out of our system ethical, well-formed with basic skills to function in society, and hopefully along a career path, if not college. And that's our goal. What we're trying to do is get the major investments from business leaders to effect systemic change, curricular, facilities, and social, those three broad strokes, and move the entire system forward. It's not about more money for school supplies that'll be consumed and will be no further ahead a year from now.
So you've been fundraising a long time. It's kind of been your professional
years.
Life, right?
Yeah, 32 years. Yeah.
Why is it, what makes it worth it to do? Beyond the obvious, you get to bring great ideas into reality, but really, why make a career out of it?
Well, I'm inspired because you see the fire in other people's eyes. And I've worked with religious causes. We want to build a new church. We want to evangelize in the north, in Canada. I used to live and work in Canada. We want to take the message out even in our inner cities. There are people with this tremendous fire in their eyes, and to be a part of that, whether it be we want to build a playground in our neighborhood or the love of God or health care or even with political aims, a lot of the professional societies and trade associations here in Washington have advocacy agendas. It means something to their livelihood.
Yeah.
And to be a part of that and then see something tangible result. We built this building. We opened this clinic. This playground is here. The new science center on our high school. That's very rewarding, and that drives me.
Where do you want to lead this foundation over the next 5 years? Where do you want to be 5 years from now?
5 years from now, I would like this foundation to be seen as the catalyst, the leveraging partner between business, our success, and the school system, which is a major player. If we're recognized as the go-to when, let's say, Lockheed Martin has, or whoever, has a need for more robotics engineers, that they come to us and say, let's forge a partnership to create a specialized program.
Right.
That we will get these highly talented young people for not just our company, but for our industry.
Right. What's the website address, Mike?
It's fcpsfoundation.org.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Mike Infanari, who's the executive director of the Foundation for Fairfax County Public Schools. I'd like to thank my co-host, Mark Cohen with Opti4, for helping me with the interview. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, for more about our executive leaders. This is Peter Schwartz, your host. We'll be back in a moment right after this Business Spotlight.
This is Les Smolin with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining us today is Jody Ruth, founder and president of Acumetrics. Welcome, Jody. Jody, what is Acumetrics?
Acumetrics is a firm that works with CEOs that are interested in growing their revenues and bottom lines in a scalable, sustainable way.
And what's your role within the company?
I'm the founder and president.
And what is it about the job that you bring that's so unique to you, that special gift, as we say?
That special gift? I enjoy working with the CEOs to have them achieve goals that they thought were impossible.
And what is it about the organization that makes it so special?
We work, our clients say that it's the three P's: our people, our platform, and our processes. Our people are highly qualified and they're fun to work with.
Mm-hmm.
Our processes are enabling of reliable and timely financial information, and our platform is scalable.
And who is, or what is, perhaps, the perfect client for you?
Businesses of any size that want reliable, timely financial information.
Mm-hmm. And what do you enjoy most about this work?
I enjoy working with the clients and making a difference. We like to help the CEOs understand their financial information so they can make different choices tomorrow to impact future results of the business.
That's great. What's the website for the company?
www.acumetricsllc.com.
Thank you, Jody.
Thanks, Les.
We've been speaking with Jody Ruth, founder and president of Acumetrics. This is Les Smolin, and that's been your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Peter Schwartz. I'm joined by my co-host, Mark Cohen with Opti4. And for this segment, we have Ken Kirk, who's the executive director of an organization called the National Association of Clean Water Agencies. Tell us a little bit about this association, Ken.
The National Association of Clean Water Agencies is an organization that was formed in 1970. In advance of the passage of the monumental Clean Water Act of 1972 to clean up America's waters. They've done, you know, a great job. They've had significant milestones to meet in terms of building secondary treatment facilities and capacity.
So the members are the ones that actually have to clean the water. Utility companies?
Correct. Our members are wastewater utilities throughout the country. We have 280, you know, members serving approximately 80% of the sewered population of the United States.
And their job is to keep the water clean.
Their job is to keep the water clean, and they rely very heavily on the rates that ratepayers pay into the system.
Right. And you were telling us in the green room with some pride that this is the most important job in the United States. Why is that?
Well, it is the most important job in the United States because water is extremely important. The bottom line is you can't live without water for very long, it's just part of the fabric of America. Swimming, boating, camping, recreation, the value associated with vibrant downtown areas along rivers. All of our major cities are on waterways. And then the amount of economic activity that has been generated, through their efforts over the past 40 years has been absolutely tremendous. If you just, consider, what the Potomac River looked like 45 years ago, or Boston Harbor for that matter, or downtown Cleveland where the Cuyahoga River caught fire in the late 1960s, and take a look at those what those places look like today. That's the result of the work of my members over the past 45 years, and that's been replicated all over the country.
How long have you been the executive director?
I've been the executive director for 25 years, since 1989.
That's a long time. Why did you want the job in the first place?
I was very committed to giving something back to urban America. I grew up in Manhattan on the Lower East Side, didn't have much growing up. Caught a break with the Boys Club of New York, which sent me to a private boarding school in Connecticut when I was 12 years old. I learned a lot there, went on to college, which I wasn't supposed to do, went on to law school, which I wasn't supposed to do, ended up at EPA, and then I met a group of folks who'd come in to talk about their early stages of meeting the requirements of the Clean Water Act. And I decided when I met them that these are the people who are going to get it done. These are the people who are going to clean up America's waters, and I wanted to work with them. A few years later, I had the opportunity to accept a job working for the firm that represented their interests at that time. I did some other things, but my primary activity was working on their behalf.
And because of your experience with the Boys Club and the gifts that you got earlier in your life, you felt this need to give back, and this was just the ideal way to do it?
It was really important to me. I think I started out my career right out of law school. I worked at the Department of Housing and Urban Development. Mm-hmm. And that didn't quite, do it for me. The environmental movement was kicking in. So I went back to school to get a master's in environmental law. And at that time, I went over to the Environmental Protection Agency, and that's where I met my future employers.
Yeah. What is it about this work that is so passionate for you?
It's really exciting. Water is so important to the fabric of the country. If you look at it in terms of issues that are really important around the world, and take into account all the places around the world that don't have an adequate supply of water or sanitation, it's absolutely mind-blogging how far ahead we are, and it's a great thing because it creates jobs. It underpins our economy, not only locally and at the state level, but nationally. It's important for national security reasons.
Yeah.
And even at the time of 9/11, there were concerns about the
right.
The vulnerability of water and wastewater
utilities.
How do
you spend the bulk of your day in the role of executive director?
Oh, at this point, I'm retiring in a year, so I'm kind of right now spending a lot of time with my board trying to figure out
a succession.
How they're going to do the succession, which is an interesting process. But I spend a lot of time on the road talking to folks around the country. I spend a lot of my time with my staff, which is an absolutely great staff.
Yeah,
I spend
a lot of my time
talking to my members. I want to stay involved in the water arena. Yeah,
somehow I got the impression we're going to leave it all the way.
No, I'm not going to leave it all the way. As I told my board, they said, "Why do you want to leave?" I said, "Well, I've been around this organization for so long. I've helped build it. I've had strong leadership, throughout the past 35 years. But there comes a time where you recognize that you can't take an organization to the next level, and I'm very interested in making sure that they do bring somebody on who can take it to the next
level.
Good
for you.
And I wanted to make sure that they had enough time to do that, so I actually told them I was leaving a year ago, and I still have a year to go.
To ensure a nice, smooth transition.
Absolutely.
That has a legacy, and that's important to you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Across all the years, what's your proudest moment?
Oh, gee, proudest moment. Proudest moment was probably getting the job to begin with, because I had wanted it for years before that. Proudest moment, I guess, is just recognizing the incredible improvements that our members have made to their cities and to the country as a whole. And you know, and I don't think they were particularly. I don't think they particularly had that mindset when they started out. They were. They always wanted to be in the shadows. They didn't want the attention of the media.
How about important influences or mentors along the way? Person that really kind of, you know, if it wasn't for this person, I probably wouldn't be who I am.
Oh, I had several fellow Charlie Sikoriak at the Boys Club of New York. Mm-hmm. You know, took me under his wing and introduced me to the educational program.
Right,
had a lot of faith in me. It was a fairly, you know, difficult and strenuous testing period for a 12-year-old not knowing anything about the world and coming from where where I grew up. And but the concept was that the benefactor or the guy who set this program up felt very strongly that in order to give people who like myself who grew up in the neighborhood that I grew up in a chance, they had to take us out of that environment and put us in a totally different environment.
Yeah.
Another mentor was a wonderful, you know, man, Leon Waskowitz, who was one of the teachers I had in high school, and he was a tough old guy, and I was, you know, a young New Yorkite, you know, going to a prep school, scared out of my wits, but he took me under his wing, and he'd take me to basketball games in the garden, and gave me a lot of attention and was always there for me when I doubted myself and had questions about whether I really belonged there or not.
Mentors are an important thing, aren't they?
They sure are.
What's the website address, Ken?
www.nacwa.org.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Ken Kirk, who's the executive director of the National Association of Clean Water Agencies. We've had a great lineup of guests on our show today, including Parker Teal, who's the president of Teal Construction, Inc., Mike Leff, the VP of Civilian Government Solutions for AT&T, Mike Infinari, who's the executive director for the Foundation for Fairfax County Public Schools, and finally Ken Kirk, who's the executive director for the National Association of Clean Water Agencies. I'd like to thank Mark Cohen with Optifor for helping me structure the interviews today. I'd like to thank you, our listening audience, for without you, we wouldn't have a radio show. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. You can hear the show again on businesstalkradio.net. We'll talk to you next week. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Executive Leaders Radio, the region's premier radio show highlighting local executive leaders. We hope you've enjoyed the show here on 1500 AM. You can learn more about Executive Leaders Radio by visiting executiveleadersradio.com or tune in next time right here on 1500 AM. That's executiveleadersradio.com.
Welcome back to The Dog Show. Up next, we have Satchmo. Satchmo is a member of the Shelter Pet Group.
That's right, a group known especially for their couch-snuggling, ball-chasing, face-licking, tail-wagging, backyard-hanging, and, of course, companionship.
And what breed would you say Satchmo is?
I'd have to go with maybe a lavish terrier-hound-chihuahua-looking kind of mix.
Tremendous dog.
I'd also like to point out Satchmo's coloring, a white, gray, brown, black brindle. Simply marvelous.
You know, it's such a treat to watch a dog like this.
Now, let's see him in action.
Look how he makes eye contact with his person.
That's actually known as the treat stare.
How intuitive. And now he appears to be excitedly turning in circles.
Ah, the happy dance, so common with this group.
And finally, the loving face lick.
It's great how he just gets in there and, well, licks.
Fantastic. But really, the best way to know an amazing shelter pet like Satchmo is to meet one.
Visit theshelterpetproject.org today. Adopt.
Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
At any given moment, somewhere in America, a baby is taking a first step, a developmental milestone. But for too many parents, a baby's first steps aren't just a milestone. They're a miracle. These are the parents of babies who were born prematurely or with birth defects. It's a crisis affecting more than 500,000 babies in the United States each year. You can help them by joining volunteers like you who walk and march for babies. The money you raise funds research and local programs that help babies overcome the challenges of premature birth and birth defects. Together, our steps make stronger, healthier babies a reality for thousands of families. Sign up today at marchforbabies.org to take the steps that help make milestones and even miracles possible. Who will you march for?
Attention all Virginia voters, you're invited to a free election expo. Mark your calendar for July 20th from 1:30 through 4:30. Come to the Manassas Park Community Center located at 99 Adams Street, Manassas Park, Virginia. You can register to vote or update your voter information. Learn what photo ID will be accepted in November, obtain information on absentee voting, and learn how to become a poll worker. Various election-related groups will be in attendance. Manassas Park voters can try the new scanners that will be used in November. Voters can also meet members from the Manassas Park governing body. Candidates on the November ballot have been invited to share their vision for Virginia and answer your questions. There will be graphs and games for the children. For more information, call 703-335-8806. That's 703-335-8806. Be an informed voter come November. They hope to see you on July 20th.
This is the sound of a brand new outdoor grill being hurled off a 20-story building. Now a stylish glass coffee table. An electric guitar. These are the things you could enjoy all cast into oblivion. Because when you throw away money on wasted electricity, you throw away everything you could have bought with it. Visit EnergySavers.gov and get tips on how to save energy and money. Then do things like switch to Energy Star light bulbs or Energy Star appliances, and you could save hundreds of dollars a year. So this doesn't happen to the recliner you've had your eye on, or this to the treadmill on your wish list, or this to the shiny new bike your kid's been asking for. Saving energy saves you money. Learn more at EnergySavers.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
Dear John, I was hoping it wouldn't come to this, but you've left me no choice. I'm leaving. Uncontrolled high blood pressure is really serious, and lately you seem to really not care. I've been there for you since day one, and I know you think I'm going to keep ticking. But no, my friend, I can quit whenever I want. Why can't we get back to the good times, when we were more active and ate more healthy foods, and you checked on me every once in a while? Is that too much to ask? I don't want to leave, but unless you stop ignoring me, what else am I supposed to do? Remember, when I quit, you quit. Sincerely, your heart.
Listen to your heart. Don't let it quit on you. Doing the minimum to control your high blood pressure isn't doing enough. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. Find out how at heart.org/bloodpressure. Check, change, control. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
For 45 years, people have relied on Village Green Apothecary to give them individualized nutrition, pharmacy, and healthy living products. Village Green will give you the kind of person-to-person help and attention that mass-market pharmacies have long ago forgotten. You can depend on us for knowledge, experience, product selection, and a smile. Visit Village Green in Bethesda at 5415 West Cedar Lane. Call us at 301-530-0800 or check out our website at myvillagegreen.com. We're here to help you.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Essentials of Healthy Living here on AM 1500. This paid